warn you now.
This reading is called Love After Love, and it's by Derek Walcott. The time will come when with elation you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's reflection and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit, feast on your life. In all this tumult, the daily and hourly news cycle, the seemingly unending slings and arrows of life on Earth, we are reminded by wise ones all over the world that we are also here to fall in love with one another. So as Mary Oliver famously writes, I invite each of us, no matter how lonely, to come to a place now of welcome and learning, of openness to a message we may or may not have heard before, one that is just for each of us and each of our hearts alone and all of us together. I invite us to fall in love with one another and with ourselves. When I was first asked to give a sermon focused on what it is like to be a fat femme minister, some topics came to mind. My original blurb read as follows. We read everyone. Every body we encounter, we perceive them through our own lenses, our own headphones, if you will. Everyone we encounter runs the risk of becoming little more than a story told by our own minds, colonized by social expectations of beauty, behavior, and other ways of being. I am a woman, assigned female at birth, and raised as a girl in the United States. I am also a femme, a term I use to denote the ways I consider my gendered self-expression. I am also, of course, a very fat person in a culture where people are terrified of fat and hate it, and by extension, want to eradicate fatness at any cost. The writer Ijeoma Oluo speaks in a voice motivated by love and yet ringed about by outrage. And so I cannot quote all of her as I would like to, as there is language in the quotation I don't feel quite comfortable sharing in a congregation. You can look it up for yourselves. However, this much I will tell you. She says, you know, fat people live every day knowing they're fat. They're told every day by friends, family, coworkers, television, articles, movies, books, that they are part of an epidemic. They are told that their body is a time bomb. They are reminded that they are impossible to desire, unlovable, unpresentable. They are reminded that they are lazy and broken and failures every single day. She goes on, you think it doesn't get to us? You think we aren't getting it? Do you really think you could tell us something about our bodies we haven't already heard? Do you know what it is like to be told that you are broken and gross and a failure every single day? Some of you doubtless do. I certainly do. Fat people like me are most often represented in visual media without faces or even heads showing. It is only our bodies that appear, almost invitations to some strange, disgusted voyeurism. Look for this pattern on internet images, and I guarantee you will find it. The onus is on us to constantly advocate for ourselves, especially we who also have physical disability related to fatness. I check out restaurants before I go to them, sometimes calling to ask whether the chairs have arms, whether there are sturdy benches or those chairs I hate, the molded plastic ones that go on patios. My body and those chairs are just not friends, as you might imagine. I have been harassed on the street by strangers here in a city often noted for open-mindedness and even for a large fat acceptance community. Earlier in my life, during years of bullying, I was spat on and yelled at and told me that if I just do something, anything, just not give up, things would be better. And this is despite solid data we now have showing that only about 5 to 10% of people who intentionally try to lose substantial amounts of weight, only that very few will keep it off beyond 5 years, and most not even 2. I have been called a beached whale more times over the course of my life than I can count. And once someone just behind me in line said, "Beached whales like her don't deserve to live." For many years, I internalized these messages. They turn inward, and many of you understand that dynamic in one way or another, taking in what the world says as though it is kind or true, compassionate or worthy. I have even thought at low points that this body in which I live and move and in which I am every day of my life is somehow a sign, a symbol of overconsumption and consumerist affluenza. I have questioned whether it is reasonable of me to be any kind of teacher, to preach to congregations, to write, to speak up, to crack open the already open secrets of what it might mean to be a fat woman and spiritual leader. As I considered what I was asked to preach, I thought I might ask other people what it means to them to see a fat minister, a spiritual leader preaching sitting down, a fat woman with makeup on and glitter, that purview of preschoolers, in her hair, sitting and speaking with a congregation. But beauty. Beauty is more than just personal human beauty. It is and is more than what we think about one another daily. It is also how we judge and offer, steal or rescind worth and dignity, respect, love, and care. So I found that I wanted to ask a larger question. I wanted to ask something deeper, something about how we can learn to perceive beauty as a manifestation of what Unitarian Universalists identify as the first of the named 6 sources of our faith. That is, direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. And so I began to consider those qualities we think of as transcendent mystery, and perhaps how they are manifest in what we call beauty, and sometimes inner beauty. The radiance of someone you know, of no particular astonishing physical beauty, or someone whose voice brings you to your knees when he sings. So what is it then, beauty? John Keats famously wrote in his Ode on a Grecian Urn, "Truth, beauty, beauty, truth, that's all ye need to know on earth." And that appeals. I am, after all, the daughter of a poetry professor and quite attached to Keats. I almost believe him, but I don't think it's the whole story. Another piece of the story comes from something I heard in an interview with John O'Donohue in his discussion on interior landscapes and the beauties therein. He has the most lovely, lilting Irish voice, or he did, and I can't reproduce it for you. I can only share his words. Beauty isn't all about just nice loveliness. Beauty is about a more rounded, substantial becoming. So I think beauty in that sense is about an emerging fullness, a greater sense of grace and elegance, a deeper sense of depth, he says. The beauty expressed there is more like the New Testament Greek word for perfection, which can also mean maturity, fullness, or ripeness, as in a nice peach. O'Donohue brings up the idea of fullness and becoming, movement towards something more mature and deep, and suggests that beauty is about depth, which is something I associate with wisdom, that elusive virtue so many of us seek, whether we know it or not. So I've had several answers here. Colonized narratives, depth, wisdom, truth. But what I have kept coming back to is the idea of wonder, of awe, of how beauty is something that can take us up short, turn our head on the street, make us weep at a painting, or as my friend Jonathan once did in the middle of Washington, D.C., fall on our knees on the sidewalk for the full moon. These things, and all of us individually and in community, are miracles. Partly by way of explaining what I mean by a miracle, I return us to consider that first source, and the source of my own theology at its core. Direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. This statement affirms the experience many of us share with billions around the world, the experience of wonder. Wonder at one another's capacity for goodness and kindness and vulnerability, at the feelings music or gardening or landscape architecture or dance or any other human endeavor may bring us. The word miracle actually comes from Latin through Anglo-French and into Middle English. The late Latin word is miraculum, from its earlier root, mirari, to wonder. To wonder. Beauty and miracles, then, are those things which bring us to wonder and awe at something outside ourselves, or even within our own selves. And so, by way of encouraging you to experience this wonder, I offer you a spiritual practice. And it might be difficult. It was for me. Reverend Teresa Soto, well known for their work in disability and anti-racist activism in our tradition, taught it to me after they enrolled in a seminary class about taking and looking anew at pictures of oneself. Beloved selfies, I call them now, to find the beauty there. This practice leads to something wonderful, even awe-inspiring. There may be something you don't like ever when you see yourself in a photo. There may be something that stands out to you, a too bigness or too smallness, too much seriousness, an asymmetry, a color, a splotchy patch, an eye that does not look straight on. There is no camera, no photograph in the world that will make me thin, aside some kind of violent photoshopping. There is no point in my looking at photos and turning away in disgust because I'm fat, because my neck is big, or because my lips are asymmetrical. There's just no point. Why? One, because these things are true. They just are. And because those like the Buddhist teacher Joanna Macy remind us that in being with what is true, we can fall in love with each other, with ourselves even. No matter how difficult life is, we can fall in love again and again, or turn away. And maybe more significant, it has become important for me to consider what is beautiful as a way of affirming that I can accept the love of other people. Because to be beloved upon the earth as each one of us absolutely is one of the great purposes of human life. Because there is more to me and more to you than the flaws the culture has taught us to obsess on. What else is in that photo? Is there radiance? Is there joy? Is there solemnity? Is there serenity, movement, or an intriguing way light and shadow catch on your skin? What have you been trained not to see? And where are you a manifestation, that is, an embodiment, an incarnation of our first source, the core origin and circumference of religious experience? And it's not all about seeing, of course. Some of us, like me, do not see or see well. I invite all of us to expand our notions of beauty beyond just the visible, but also into the tactile. What are the glorious sensations touching our own skin, changing us from the inside out? Can we love singing whatever we have been taught about how we sound or what we contribute? What does our laugh bring out in others? I have reclaimed some of the ideas of beauty by rejecting the idea that I could only be one of the boys growing up, the degendering I experienced. So I do this in a way that makes me happy for myself as a femme, a queer woman loving makeup, grace, poise, and radiance. And another way has been to take back the image of the whale, the great cetacean, the biggest creatures ever known to have lived on Earth, who even now swim so deeply that we cannot track the full migratory path of their journeys, blue whales in particular. I intend a tattoo around my arm of the singing whale, the humpback, with its long fins and beautiful voice. I, for myself, claim the beauty, strength, even sensuality of the whale, not just the sleek loveliness of the bottlenosed porpoise, but also the mystery and musicality of the big ones. Finally, I have realized that if I were thin, I would be someone else. Amor fati, the love of fate, the acceptance of reality and its blessings, has gotten me through many traumas, including those surrounding my body's shapes and sizes. I am sitting here preaching with you, preaching on this, preaching because Mark asked me to, in part because of this body. This is not to say the terror of fat and fat people is okay. Merely that I know myself loved, loved with all of who I am, and that that gives me liberation to love others and to try to shine some light where things are otherwise obscured. And I can wonder at myself. These things allow me to come to you with glitter in my hair, in a dress I love, with a stole I chose for today's marine occasion. These ways of being and expression bring me a sense of possibility, of wonder and of radiance, and a reminder that we are all miracles, those things that must be wondered at. So what might you do to claim or reclaim your wonder? How might you demand a sense of your own beauty? Could you take a beloved selfie? Could you show it to someone else? Could you look at old photographs, ones that have made you uncomfortable, and find the grace and goofiness, the loveliness there? Let us indeed wonder at others and at ourselves. Let us be mindful of the miracles around us every minute. Every minute, even now, even here, as we worship together.